with Aaron Dowd.
I throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Cowk with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP.
Skinny on Sports podcast is there on iTunes, KADSAM.com. As I said, you can go back and listen to any of those shows as that we've got archived throughout the 5 and almost coming on 6 years here, not that long from now. Hey, it is a Paul Jones Drug Tuesday. Rodney Skinner at Paul Jones Drug Care You Can Trust. They've got free delivery in the Elk City area. 809 North Main Street is their address. Hey, they're the oldest compounding pharmacy in Elk City. That means they've got the experience with the compounding. Mentioned the free local delivery, drive-through pickup. You can drive-through pick up your stuff, curbside testing, and vaccinations as well. It's Paul Jones Drug here in Elk City. We'll be telling you all about them as we move along throughout the show. Okay, kids, state baseball tournaments happening all, well, most in a couple of locations across the state this week. The older guys, the 12U and the 10U start today. 12U is over in Weatherford. There's some local teams that are involved there. The 10U is all across the state in Salisaw, and that'll start today as well. So we'll start with the 10U in the blue bracket. A couple of Western Oklahoma teams are involved. 12U today in Weatherford. In the blue bracket, you've got the Mangum Cubs. Mangum won that regional up in Woodward with a couple of wins on Saturday over the Elk City Crushers. Mangum has two or three really good arms. They're kind of feel like a team that's sort of built for this tournament, for these tournaments, because they have so much depth on their pitching staff. So Mangum Cubs will play Davenport. That's a 2 o'clock game. So the first game of the day on field 2 is Mangum and Davenport at 2 o'clock. Then at 6 o'clock, Mountain View Godibo, the Tigers, will play Stillwell, the Stillwell Indians. That's a 6 o'clock start there. And then immediately following that one, you've got the Tuttle Tigers against the Weatherford Black. That's supposed to be an 8 o'clock start in the blue bracket on the 12U. The red bracket, they'll be playing on field 1 today. The first game of the day is the Elk City Crushers. The Crushers, state's runner-up last year in their final year of 10U. Crushers will play the Anadarko Purple. That's a 2 o'clock start there in Weatherford. And then the nightcap features another Western Oklahoma team. The Weatherford Gray will play Chickasha at 8 o'clock. So that's the 12U over in Weatherford starting today. 10U, it's clear across the state in Salisaw. But that doesn't mean the Western Oklahoma is not represented. In the red bracket on field 1 today in Salisaw, 6 o'clock, the Sayre Eagles will take on the Purcell Legends. Eagles coming off the regional championship over in Weatherford. Gosh, I can pull up their record. I think it's 38-5 on the season, if I remember right. So Sayre, once again, they've had a fantastic year, and a bunch of them are 34-5. I'm sorry, a bunch of them are heading across the state as we speak to get ready to play at Salisaw tonight, 6 o'clock. Sayre Eagles and the Purcell Legends. That's in the red bracket. In the blue bracket, you've got the Merritt Drillers. They'll be in the state tournament. They're going to play Stillwell at 8 o'clock. Merritt's played fantastic all throughout the summer, got better and better as it's gone along. I've personally got to see them play a whole bunch of games, and they've really, really improved as the summer has rolled on. So Merritt will play Stillwell at 6. Right before that, the Hobart Sluggers, another team that's played really well, especially over the last couple of weeks. The Hobart Sluggers will play Cameron LC Patriots. Your guess is as good as mine as to who that is. But that's at a 4 o'clock start. So those will be back-to-back with Hobart at 4, Merritt at 6. That's blue bracket action. They'll be on field 2 today over in Salisaw. So the guys that pitch, the kid pitch starts today with peewees and midgets. The coach pitch tournament's over at Clinton. It'll start on Thursday. And there's a slew of teams, Elk City Fire Frogs being one of those, Arapahoe. Clinton's got a team. Hobart's got a team in that Coach Pitch State Tournament that will start on Thursday over in Clinton. Big 12 Media Days this week. Man, what a difference a year makes from the Big 12 Media Days last year to what's going on this year. You know, it was really kind of a nothing event outside of, hey, we're getting ready to play football, and, you know, this team's supposed to be good, that team's supposed to be good, who's coming back, star power, da-da-da-da-da-da. And then about a week and a half after Big 12 Media Days, maybe even the next week, is when the first bombshell drops in the conference realignment wars that has started to break out between the SEC and the Big Ten. And the first shot across the bow came courtesy of the SEC right after Big 12 Media Day. It leaked out that Oklahoma and Texas were headed to the SEC. There wasn't a timeline per se, but they had been invited, have now accepted. And so, you know, is that originally, it's okay, is that going to be at the end of the grant of rights, the media grant of rights with the Big 12, which would be 2025? So that kind of took everybody by shock and surprise. And the Big 12 teams that would have been left over, you know, it looked pretty bleak there for a couple of weeks. And okay, where do you have to go to have a seat at the table? It felt like West to the Pac-12 a year ago was the best choice for a lot of those schools. They kind of treaded water. They kind of hung in there. Next thing you know, they end up with four schools coming back with BYU, Houston, Cincinnati, and UCF. So at least that kind of stabilized things for the season, right? And then so the season happens. Everybody plays football on the field, and this kind of gets pushed to the back burner just a little bit as far as the consciousness of the fans and even the media. But I know it wasn't for the people that are in charge and making the decisions, because it can't be. That's been a problem, I think, with Bob Bowlesby's leadership under the Big 12, is there hasn't been any sort of proactive moves made. It's always been reactionary from Nebraska and Colorado and A&M and Missouri leaving the first time. It was always a counterpunch, but the problem was it always felt like that the Big 12 had just gotten annihilated each time. And then trying to throw counterpunches while you're backing up and kind of knocked off your feet. So that's where it stood until a couple of weeks ago. And then the second bombshell is dropped that USC and UCLA are headed to the Big Ten. And with that move, the money has kind of always been a separating factor as far as the conferences have gone, especially over the last decade in college football, with the media right fees going so high, the Big Ten network getting really established and entrenched and being a real revenue driver. Obviously, the SEC network and its ability to get ESPN involved and ESPN money involved and the way that the distribution of that happens. It's just such a huge asset to kind of be in bed with ESPN, the way the SEC has been able to do that. And so the money has kind of started to separate those two from everybody else. And then with the two going to the SEC with OU and Texas, the two going from the Pac-12 with UCLA and USC, you can really start to see how much that's going to matter and how much more that's going to matter. And it's really kind of the haves and the sort of haves. And I think that's where the Big 12 sits right now. And they're not necessarily a have-not, because they have a viable league. And with the different things going on with media rights, you know, what's CBS going to do? You know, CBS is losing that SEC game of the week, in which they were paying $55 million for one game. You know, now that frees that up. Do they want to continue to be in the college football business? If they do, the new Big 12, plus if they're able to wrangle away four of those Pac-12 teams, that looks pretty attractive. It's a pretty attractive piece on a Saturday for CBS. And especially when you consider if the Big 12 were to be able, we've even seen as many as six with Oregon and Washington maybe coming into that conference. If that were to happen, then you're talking about a league that stretches all four time zones. So they can have a presence in every window that there is on a Saturday for college football. That's enticing. That may not mean that every game is on CBS. You think about what that network's got on a Saturday. Obviously, PGA Tour golf isn't quite the issue that it has been in the past, just with the revamped schedule. That thing doesn't run all the way into September and October like it used to. So that's one hurdle that's cleared. And so with CBS, the different networks that CBS Sports has, you don't necessarily have to put the best game of the day in the Big 12 at 11 o'clock if you're CBS. Everybody's used to flipping their channel to channel 9 around here at 2:30, right? I mean, that's when that's the SEC game of the week, and it's normally one of the better games in the country. And so I think that could be one advantage for the Big 12 that they haven't had, is kind of new blood in the bidding wars. But then also, it doesn't have to be the 11 o'clock window because everyone is so used to flipping to CBS at 2:30. So, and I think that's one thing that with TV, I know OU fans have griped about it for years now. But even for me growing up, that afternoon game, it's when everything was played. A bunch of these places, heck, Norman didn't have lights forever. And so it was, 2:30, 1:30, 2:30, that's when college football was played. And as TV's gotten more and more involved, those games have gone from either 11 o'clock or prime time. The middle of the day games is kind of where you don't want to be, at least in the conference that the two state schools have been, because that means that your game isn't one of the bigger games of the day if you're stuck in that 2:30 window. So maybe that CBS, what does NBC want to do with Notre Dame? What's Notre Dame going to have to be forced to do? I mean, the amount of questions that have been dug up and raised in a year's time between last year's Big 12 Media Day and this year is just fascinating. And I think I told Jared last week or maybe off the air, I find this conference realignment stuff and the possibilities and the matchups and how is college football going to be structured from now on, I find that almost as intriguing as the actual games. And sitting here talking about results of games and this play and that play and the other play, that's all fun, but it's something we've kind of seen. Like with this realignment and the possibilities of what this could be, and the matchups that we could see, and then how does everything get worked out with the playoff, and can these conferences and can these power brokers in college football figure out the right recipe to take advantage of the money that's generated, but also keep the fan experience in mind and keep what really has built college football is arguing about who's the best team. And until 25 years ago, that's all you really had, because you never got to see those teams play. And so as the BCS came into existence, and then that led to a playoff, now those arguments, it's a little bit more NFL-ish in that, yeah, you can have them and yeah, they're fun throughout the season, but at the end of the day, the argument's probably going to get settled, because if you really are one of the two best teams in the country, guess what? We're going to get to see that on a Monday night in January. And so how you keep the passion of the fans for all 4 months or 5 months of the season from September all the way through into January, how you keep that passion stoked and flowing, I think, is the biggest challenge for all of this conference realignment stuff, because that is what college football is. It's arguing about your team versus that team throughout the season, and being able to see results of games, I hope, doesn't take those arguments away, because that's what drives it. That's what shows like this are able to feed off of. It's almost more speculation as opposed to what you really get to see. And I'm afraid that if it gets to the point where the postseason waters down the regular season because, you know, these games don't matter as much in the grand scheme of things because you're going to get a mulligan or even two mulligans now if it turns into 12 or 16. I don't think that's good for the sport. I think that kind of takes away from what college football has been and has been built on. And to me, college football has been built on arguing for your team and creating that passion for your team in a scenario where you only get to see one game of two teams, or you know, now it's three games with four teams. And I'm just afraid that if it continues down this path, and you know, the idea that the more the merrier in the playoff, you're looking more at what we're seeing in college basketball than what's made college football great. So hopefully that doesn't happen. But Big 12 Media Days, what an amazing year it's been from the last time the Big 12 got together down in the Metroplex to this year when they get together in the Metroplex to preview the Big 12 season ahead. All right, it's Paul Jones Drug Tuesday. Rodney Skinner at Paul Jones Drug Care, you can trust. Got free delivery right here in the Elk City area. 809 North Main. We'll tell you about them when we come back. Also, British Open. Tee times are out. Some interesting comments from one Tiger Woods. It's going to be a good week over there in Scotland. Skinny on Sports right here on the Sports Animal.
Paul Jones Drug offers a free service that makes taking your daily medications safe and easy. It's called convenience packaging, meaning they can combine all of your daily medications and put them in sealed, separate daily packages. This process replaces you from having to fill your daily medication dispenser. And as always, Paul Jones Drug prepares individual blister packaging for long-term care patients. With their drive-through window, curbside service, and free local delivery, it's just more reasons you should choose Paul Jones Drug, 809 North Main Street in Elk City.
I'm Rodney Skinner with Paul Jones Drug, and I promise, we provide care you can trust.
The Skinny on Sports.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Welcome back. Skinny on Sports, 98.1 FM, the Sports Animal. It is a Paul Jones Drug Tuesday. Rodney Skinner and the gang down at Paul Jones Drug. Convenience packaging. That's what that is we've all seen the big plastic pill dispenser thing, or holders, I guess, where it could be all sorts of colors. It's got little compartments in it. It's got like the days of the week on the front. You have to fill them up, and you got to make sure you put the right amount of each pill in each day, and then you got to remember where you put it so that you can find it on that day to be able to take the pills out of it, and, you know, all that. Wipe that away. Convenience packaging. Here's what it is. They do that for you. And then they put it in a package. And all you got to do is rip open the package, take the pills. You have total confidence that it was actually Rodney and the gang putting the right pills in the right day instead of you, which is a great thing. It's one of the best things they've got down there, Paul Jones Drug, that individual packaging of your daily meds. You just open it, take them, throw it away, and you'll be ready to go for the next day that they've got those packaged that way. Also, durable medical equipment. We're talking about walkers, canes, crutches, wraps, braces, any of that kind of stuff. They've got it available for you there at Paul Jones Drug. 809 North Main. Give them a call, 225-2121. All right, so this week, the 150th British Open. It'll tee off about midnight, which would be midnight Wednesday into Thursday. The first tee time would be 12:35 our time. Wednesday, or early Thursday morning. And number 150, it's at the home of golf, St. Andrews. And you can really kind of sense, at least in the run-up to it, listening to the players' interviews, the excitement that's being built around this golf tournament. And I think it comes at a really interesting time with kind of the crossroads of golf seeming to be right in front of us. You know, one of the things that's been bandied about for 20 years now is, okay, this is great. Golf is booming. What do we do when Tiger's done? And I can't help but wonder, with everything that he's gone through health-wise and in his personal life, I mean, those have all just kind of started stacking up. Then obviously the wreck back in February of 20, you're looking at a guy that I don't know how much more he's got left to give. I mean, it's something that he's given quite literally his body to even before the wreck, with, you know, having to have a spine fusion surgery, a back fused, and all that kind of stuff because of the manner in which he trained to play golf and the manner in which he swung the golf club. And so there's something in the back of my mind that wonders, with him skipping the U.S. Open, you know, could this be it? It's hard to think that with him not kind of having a time to walk up 18 at Augusta and doff his cap as he's coming in either on a Friday missing the cut or early Sunday morning, not really in contention, like we've seen so many other guys do. You know, there's iconic photos of whether it be Jack or Arnie or any of those guys that are legends of the game that kind of had their swan song and their walk-off moment at Augusta National specifically. And Tiger certainly didn't have that this year. But with all the pageantry surrounding this British Open at this golf course, and the fact that he even skipped the U.S. Open in order to be at this specific tournament, I don't know. I don't know that part of me thinks, man, it's possible. It's very possible this is it. There's another part of me that just thinks, you know what? He understands the British Open isn't going to be back there for another 5 or 6 years. But at that point, he's 53, 54 years old. And with the way that his leg is now, there's no way that you could be realistic, I think, in his mind to think, okay, I'll be better now or then than I am now. So I wonder if that's why he's kind of pouring everything into this week, hoping that the leg will respond and this may be the one last gasp effort at having a true chance to be able to compete. And then after that, you know, you show up and you play and if, you know, lightning in a bottle and all that kind of stuff. I mean, if there's one place that's been proven year after year that quirky things happen, and it is here. I mean, think about in 2009, 59-year-old Tom Watson was one giant bounce of an 8-iron away from winning the British Open. With a one-shot lead on the last hole, and he hits it right in the middle of the green, and it takes a huge bounce and rolls over into a bad spot, and he can't get it up and down, and then he loses the playoff to Stewart Cink. So, you know, literally half the bounce he got, he two-putts, and at 59, he wins a major championship. And so that would be the part where I think, man, this can't be it. But at the same time, Tom Watson didn't have the physical ailments of what Tiger did. And then I also wonder how much this live stuff is kind of weighing on this tournament. Because even though the live golf played in Portland just a couple of days ago, doesn't it feel it's a little bit more international than it is right here in America? To me, it affects the Open, the British Open, more than maybe what it does day-to-day life on the PGA Tour. And I think you see that in the comments from some of the guys that are being made. And one guy that's obviously been against it, but he's never really kind of said what he thinks, is Tiger. And so today, he was asking his pre-tournament press conference what he, you know, kind of his thoughts on LIV, and here's what he said. He said, some players have never got a chance to even experience it being the PGA Tour. They've gone right from the amateur ranks into that organization and never really got a chance to play out here and what it feels like to play a PGA Tour schedule or to play in some big events. And who knows what's going to happen in the near future with the world golf ranking points, criteria for intermajoring championships, for entering major championships. The governing body is going to have to figure that out. Some of these players may never, ever get a chance to play in majors. It's a possibility. We don't know that for sure. It's up to the major championship bodies to make that determination, but that's a possibility that some players will never, ever get a chance to play in a major, never get a chance to experience this here, walking down the fairways at Augusta National. And it's, I think this gives you an insight into what has made Tiger great in these next couple of sentences. To me, I just don't understand that. I understand what Jack and Arnold did, because playing professional golf at a tour level versus a club pro level is different. And I understand that transition and that move and the recognition that a touring pro is versus a club pro. What these players are doing for guaranteed money, what is the incentive to practice? What is the incentive to go out there and earn it in the dirt? You're just getting paid a lot of money up front and playing a few events and playing 54 holes. They're playing blaring music and have all these atmospheres that are different. I don't see how out of 54 holes. I can understand it, 54 holes, but I don't see how these guys can do that. The guys are a little bit older, a little bit more banged up, but when you're at the young age, some of the kids are, 72 holes is part of the test. It used to be where you had to play 36 holes playoffs for majors. And I think when he talks about the grind and he talks about him just not – he doesn't understand that. He doesn't understand why you would play the game of golf at this level for anything other than winning golf tournaments, for anything other than playing and winning major championships. The idea of showing up to a tournament and already being guaranteed money, it doesn't equate in his mind, because that's not what he was grown up idolizing, which meant was Jack, and which was playing PGA Tour golf. And so, you know, that's been something I know Jared's talked about, is just the level of competition out there on the LIV, how little there really is, because it's more of an exhibition than it is what we're used to seeing on tour year in, year out. So I thought that was interesting with Tiger. And then also, I got this on the text line. I'd seen this and had it written down. But there's also something else swirling around this British Open as well, and that is, shockingly enough, our own Department of Justice here in the United States has opened an antitrust laws investigation of the PGA Tour and LIV Golf. They're opening the investigation surrounding the PGA Tour banning these guys after they committed to the LIV Golf Tour. Pretty interesting timing, won't you say? LIV Golf is backed by Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia has a giant financial stake in the success of LIV Golf. And oh yeah, who's headed there this week to try to beg for oil for our country instead of just, you know, flying down to Texas or right here in Oklahoma or North Dakota or Pennsylvania or any other parts of the United States of America? Oh, yeah, that's right. Our president. Interesting timing that in the week that our president is going over to kiss the ring of the Saudis to try to beg for oil, his own Department of Justice is also opening up an investigation into the PGA Tour because it's banned guys that have played on the Saudi Golf Tour. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And if that doesn't tell you something, then I don't know what would. As to the British Open itself, you know, it's a different tournament than anything else we see all year long. You know, for the most part, these golf courses over there in the Scotland, you know, UK, they were essentially created by Mother Nature. There's not a whole bunch of dirt being moved around because they've been there forever. It's just humps and bumps, and I made the joke, but I'm not kidding, sheep grazing on certain areas that knocked it down. And next thing you know, The wind blows a dune up, and they put some sand in it, and they call it a bunker, and boom, there we are. And so there's a naturalness to the golf courses there. And with that comes kind of more guesswork. I mean, the turf there, you could hear it throughout the week. When we start seeing the television coverage, you start hearing the club hit the ground. You can tell how much harder that turf is. Just the surface is so much more compact. It's so much harder and so much just you can just hear it when they hit the golf ball. And then, of course, you could see it as the ball just rolls and rolls and rolls and rolls uphill, downhill. It doesn't matter because of how firm the conditions are. And that's exactly what they're looking for. Reading up everybody associated with the tournament, they always hope for the conditions to be just like they're going to be. It's going to be far. It's going to be firm. It's going to play fast on the fairways. The likelihood of the fairways rolling faster than the greens is there because of the undulations on all these greens and a bunch of these links courses. They can't afford to have the green speeds like we're accustomed to seeing here in the States. Or it just gets silly and they never finish. But when you watch the ball roll on the fairways, it's almost faster than what it is on the greens. And so it's going to take imagination. It's going to take, I think, experience. And the one thing about St. Andrews is if the wind doesn't blow, they will tear it apart. There's a chance if the wind doesn't blow any of the 4 days with as firm and fast as it's playing, the winner could be minus 20 or better. And that's something that we're not accustomed to seeing at a major championship. And a lot of people don't like at major championships. A lot of people don't like the players to be able to tear it up like they do at the, you know, at Pebble Beach or whatever, the Bob Hope, you know, where it's like dome golf and they just kill it. A lot of people want to see them challenge more. And so that's where you bring in the weather. And quite frankly, that is the challenge. That over there, you know, the courses aren't as long. They play faster, so then they're even shortened from there. And so the weather plays a huge part in what the scoring is. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you I want to see it blowing 40 and raining every single day of this tournament, because I don't. But, man, it's fun to see it at least once. Just to see those guys and the imagination and the struggle of it that they can come up with when they're hitting drivers 8 feet off the ground. You know, and everything is played more on the ground than certainly what we're used to here. And a lot of people, you know, don't understand that that's the way that the game of golf was designed, because the game of golf was born over there. And so, you know, a lot of the folks over across the pond love those conditions and love to see those guys have to play the game the way it was designed to be played before technology and before all this started, you know, getting the ball up in the air as opposed to along the ground. So I don't want it all days, but half of them's fine with me. I love to watch those guys that just, you know, it's 100 yards out and they're rolling a 7-iron up there. I think that's really cool. And the skill, yeah, you actually get to see, to me, how good those guys are when they're forced to play shots that you're just not used to seeing them play. And especially out here in Western Oklahoma and the Texas Panhandle and all around, it's shots that we've all had to try to play, because we've all been on the golf course. If you're a golfer, everyone's been out there when the wind was blowing so hard that you either had to take your hat off or turn it around backwards to keep it from blowing off your head as you're trying to swing, which means then you're having to hit the thing as low as you can possibly hit it to get any kind of yardage out of it. And I just think it's really cool to have to see those guys do it. You know, from 120 yards, you used to hit in a pitching wedge, and now they've got, you know, 4, 5, 6 iron in their hands. We all can relate to that type of golf because we've all been out there when the wind's been blowing like that before. So it's kind of the part of the Open Championship that I really, really enjoy, just because it's not something you get to see. And, oh, by the way, it's pretty nice for the thing to be over about 1 o'clock on Sunday, and then if you want to, you have a chance to go out and get a round in, as opposed to having to play during the tournament and trying to record it and hopefully nobody texts you, oh, my gosh, can you believe Tiger just chipped that one in on 16? Oh, really? I made it all the way to there, not knowing the results until that happened. So that's another beauty of the British Open, is the thing is over before you really get your day started, and there's plenty of daylight once the final round is over for you yourself to go out and get a round of golf. Tee times were announced. Some of the bigger groups, they just go in order over there. There's no front nine, back nine. Everybody tees off number one. And by the time it's over, it could be getting to dark. It's a long, long first 2 days at any British Open. But 2:30, actually 1:30 in the morning our time on Thursday, you got Phil Mickelson. You know, he's been right at the front and center of all this LIV Golf stuff. He has struggled mightily. I'm sure a bunch of that has to do with what mental state he's in and not necessarily thinking about golf as much as what's going on surrounding golf. But he'll play with Lucas Herbert, Kurt Kitayama. A fun group at 1:52 our time in the morning on Thursday. John Daly, Bryson DeChambeau, and Cameron Tringale. Cam Smith, Brooks Koepka, Seamus Power. We'll go right after them. Let's see. Rory, Colin Morikawa, and Xander Schauffele. Think the winner could come out of that threesome. They tee off at 4:00 in the morning our time on Thursday. Will Zalatoris, we've chronicled his results. One of the better young players ever in majors, just hasn't been able to lift a trophy. He's been right there in so many. I think six top tens and his first nine starts. He'll play with Hideki Matsuyama and Tony Finau. They tee off about 4:30 our time on Thursday. Then the guys a little bit later that you probably see more of because, quite frankly, you'll be awake. Dustin Johnson, Adam Scott, and Mark Leishman tee off at 7:15 our time. You got King Louis, Harris English are at 8:30. Then one of the bigger groups there is Tiger Woods, Matt Fitzpatrick, and Max Homa. They'll tee off at 9:00 our time on Thursday. And immediately after those guys is Jordan Spieth, John Rahm, and Harold Varner. So the British Open gets underway in a couple of days, Thursday morning, right here, and then it'll run all the way through Sunday. It'll be a lot of fun. And as it turns out, St. Andrews, historically, the winners at St. Andrews have been guys that are at the top of the golf world each time it's held there. And I would imagine that'll be no different this time when we get to Sunday and we see who's crowned the champion of the 150th British Open. NFL quarterback rankings next.
Paul Jones Drug is Elk City's most experienced compounding pharmacy, meaning they can custom make your prescription medications to your doctor's specifications, safely and effectively providing you with exactly what you need. And for your convenience, Paul Jones Drug has a drive-through pickup window as well as curbside service for testing and vaccinations, and offers free local delivery. Just a couple reasons you should choose Paul Jones Drug, 809 North Main Street in Elk City.
I'm Rodney Skinner with Paul Jones Drug, and I promise we provide care you can trust.
The Skinny on Sports.
Welcome back. Paul Jones Drug Tuesday right here on the Skinny on Sports. We went through all the different things that medically that Paul Jones Drug has down there, but you know what else they've got? They've got a huge selection of different gifts, greeting cards, all kinds of really cool stuff at Paul Jones Drug. Down there, 809 North Main Street, Paul Jones Drug is care you can trust with free delivery in the Elk City area. 580-225-2121, Paul Jones Drug. Also, Rodney and Lane Jones, a couple other guys, third place in B-Flight this weekend out at the Elk City Golf and Country Club. So thank you to Paul Jones Drug, Tuesday sponsor right here on the Skinny on Sports. We got another one coming. Can't wait to let you guys know who that is and get them started with the show as well. All right, so this in the ESPN list, it's NFL's top 10 quarterbacks for 2022. List is compiled from surveys of over 50 league execs, coaches, scouts, and players. And so here is how the list broke down when all the results were tabulated. The best quarterback in the league, according to those that were surveyed, Aaron Rodgers, followed by Mahomes, Josh Allen, Tom Brady, Joe Burrow, Matt Stafford, Justin Herbert, Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson, and Dak Prescott. couple of things leap out at me. Number one, it's hard for me to have a guy that hasn't played in 18 months, and that's going to be stretched clear into probably 30 months, anywhere near the top 10. And, of course, that's Deshaun Watson. We haven't seen Deshaun Watson on a football field since 2020. Oh, I guess it was actually January of 2021, and that's going to end up being at the very earliest, probably August of 2023. And so to have him in the top 10, I think is pretty silly. Just because if we're talking about for this year, you haven't seen him in 18 months. How in the world can you know anything about what he'll be like this year? And somebody actually had him ranked as high as 4. So that's the first thing that kind of jumps off the page at me. The second thing that jumps off the page at me is a guy that's actually excluded. And that's Lamar Jackson. And listen, I've been a Lamar Jackson critic when you're talking about the best quarterback in the league. And he's definitely had some struggles in the playoffs. There's no doubt about that. But he's won an MVP. 37-12 as a starter. And it's easy to remember what happened at the end of the season last year, but when the calendar turned over to December, with all the injuries that Baltimore had, Lamar Jackson had them in position to be the number one seed in the AFC, and then everything, he got hurt and everything fell apart over the last 6 games or so. But that guy, man, it's almost impossible for me to believe that Lamar Jackson isn't one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the league. With the accomplishments he's actually had, when you look at what he's done and you look at what he is, I think when he got hurt last year, he was one of the top 10 rushers in the league, and also led the league in as far as throws outside the numbers. I mean, he was doing kind of both things and complementing both things that he can do really well together at a high, high level, but that all gets kind of washed away once he gets hurt there at the end, and then, of course, Baltimore doesn't make the playoffs. So that's the first two things I thought were, wow, where's Lamar? And, man, Deshaun Watson, as good as he has been before, I just don't know how you can put him anywhere near that, anywhere on the top 10 list when we haven't seen him for such a long time. The other things, you know, the Rodgers Mahomes, I think that's most people's top two in either order. I'm interested to see what Mahomes can do this year. And if he can be what we've seen out of Patrick Mahomes in his first few years in the league, then I think that now puts him in that, in the Rodgers-Brady category of being able to make the guys around him better. Because so far in his career, Mahomes, while fantastic, it's not a knock on his ability. He has been incredible. But he's also had incredible talent around him. And that's the beauty to me of Rodgers has always been, you know, he's lifted everybody else around him up more than they've lifted him. And if Mahomes is able to kind of show that and that ability this year, then I think that puts him in that category with only he and Rodgers. If he's not, then that opens the door for the guy at number 3, and that's Josh Allen. You know, what a difference a couple years makes for him. You know, he came in as the rocket arm guy that couldn't throw it in the ocean, and he's just improved each and every year. And he's a huge guy that can run. You know, he seems like the total package in the modern-day NFL because he's got a cannon for an arm. He's improved his accuracy in his first 3 years. His first year was 52.8. Last year, 69.2. Well, I mean, it's an unbelievable improvement for him. And he can use his legs. but you're also not near as worried about him getting hurt as you are a guy like Lamar or a guy like Kyler Murray. Because he stands 6'5" with a 240-pound frame. Now, I'm not sitting here telling you that it's a good idea to run him into the line 20 times a game. We saw what happened with Cam Newton. Even a guy that big eventually kind of breaks down. But as far as the modern-day NFL, a guy that appears to have the exact perfect skill set to thrive and thrive for a long time is Josh Allen. And so to find him at number three is not a surprise. I think, the duel with Mahomes and the way that game finished in the AFC division round last year, maybe that's the difference between him being two and three, is losing that game to Mahomes and the way that it happened. Not a slight on him. It just, those when you get up here to the top, there's certain prerequisites that you're going to have, and playoff success is certainly one of those. And being able to show that not only can your team have playoff success, but have that success in a large part because of you, is where this starts to kind of separate the guys. Brady at four is just shock. It's just unbelievable. It's not shocking that he's there, but to be age 44 and consensus top five quarterback in the league still, it's just, man, he's going to play at 45 years old. And sure, he's not the same guy he was 10 years ago. But that doesn't even, physically, but that almost doesn't mean he's not better. There's nothing you can throw at him that he hasn't seen. He's just a freak of nature in so many ways. And one of those is just his ability to mentally do things that he wants to do. And sure, he's had all kinds of physical talent, but he's also been so mentally disciplined and mentally strong that he's unlike anything we've ever seen. That's why he's the GOAT. And he ruined the greatest quarterback of all time debate starting at like the age 38. It was a pretty good one until about 2017, when he ripped off three more Super Bowl appearances, had the comeback against the Falcons out of nowhere for 28-3 down. Then he beats the Rams. Then he wins one at Tampa. It's like, man, this is Peyton. Is it Brady? Is it Montana? Is it whoever else you want to throw on the list? Elway. And then a 38-year-old dude just slams the face and just slams the door in everybody's face of that conversation by ripping off what he's done in like the third stretch of his career, like the first. Then there was the middle, and now this end, and the end is lasting longer than the first two. It seems like. Guys that, Herbert and also Burrow, that they had great years last year. Russell Wilson's an interesting one to me with the move to Denver and what we think of him at the end of the season versus what we think of him right now. Because if there's a guy that it feels like maybe could fall off of this list with his performance this year, it almost feels like it's Russell Wilson to me, and I don't know if it's going to be his fault, but going to a new team, going to the Denver Broncos, been in Seattle that whole time, I think we're either going to see Russ go up these rankings, or maybe he'll be kind of the end of him feeling like one of the preeminent quarterbacks. I have a feeling it's the first one, because I think Russell Wilson is uber talented, and maybe this is kind of the rejuvenation that he needs to his career. And then Dak, down at 10. Would you take Dak Prescott over Lamar Jackson right now? It's an interesting question. Lamar Jackson's been better than Dak Prescott has as far as team success. Dak Prescott appears to have the more NFL body, NFL skill set, and maybe that's just because he's not as fast as Lamar. But that's an interesting debate. As big a Cowboy fan as I am right now, am I sure I'd take Dak Prescott over Lamar Jackson? Probably not. Anyhow, That is that's that list. We can continue tomorrow. Shockingly enough, Dakota has Pat Mahomes number one. Not shocking to anybody, but there's good arguments there, and there's, then we can talk about some other guys that maybe could get to the list. It's possible. Because a bunch of those guys are getting older, and as we've seen in basketball for sure, guys fall off cliffs eventually, except for Tom Brady. Other than him, other guys will. Everybody have a great Tuesday. Good luck to all the little kid baseball teams around the state today.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered.